Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Adisk, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Tuesday, January 17th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Well, Melody.
Well, we have Greg Hunter joining us this afternoon for the program. About 4:10, right after the market report. So he always brings a little bit of excitement to the program, and we always enjoy having him join us. So there was pressure on the markets today, but nice day for gold. We're looking at another 1280 for gold to the upside at $1,216.40. It's only off the high of about a buck, so not so bad. So 1280 for gold. At $1,216.40. Silver up 0.38 at $1,726. Platinum was down 8 at $978. And palladium was up 4 at $752. The USDX today, a lot of pressure on that, 1.25 at 100.35. And we're going to talk a little bit about that right before Greg Hunter, and mainly due to a Trump comment. And with Davos, the Davos meeting started today. Everyone's talking about the dollar cannot be strong. The dollar has to become weaker. And so we see it today down 1.25 at 100.35. Crude oil was up 10 cents today at 52.47. And there was some pressure on the paper markets today. And let me go ahead and get that. It looks like the Dow was down 59 points, 19,826. The NASDAQ was down 35 at 55.38. The S&P was down 6 at 22.67. And let's see, what else are we looking at that's interesting? The euro, of course, was stronger, 0.99 at 107. 10-year yield, 2.33%, 0.05. And Japan was down big. London was down big. Germany, not so much. Hong Kong, not so much. So both London and Germany, London and Japan were down 1.5%. And the fear needle and the fear and greed is down to 59, so that continues to set a lower trend into the fear factor. So all eyes are focused on Davos this year. You have the Chinese president with a huge delegation going over there, and he gave his speech. Yeah, I don't know if he gave it yesterday or today. But certainly you have the president-elect said that the U.S. currency is too strong. Plus, you have the British Prime Minister Theresa May's plan to leave the European Union. And the comments that she made also made the pound stronger and some other currencies stronger, the euro and so forth, and the dollar certainly weaker. So kind of interesting when people just make comments. It reminds me of the Greenspan era when he spoke and markets reacted. Didn't mean doesn't matter what he said, they reacted.
They didn't know what he said.
Maybe it's the same true with Trump. They don't know what he means.
He said something else. Trump is speaking, so everybody hang on tight. Something's happening here. I don't know what it is, but.
So, we saw that, the dollar certainly get a lot stronger or weaker today. And there was something I wanted to, there was a, well, I don't have it here, Al, so. You might have to, if you have anything you wanted to comment on it. But, certainly.
No, I'll just whistle.
You're just going to make me stumble and fumble.
Da 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 do da do da. No, what I would say is this. I've been arguing for a year and a half that the dollar's been stronger.
Here it is. This David Rubenstein. He's And, you know, a Carlyle group, we used to hear what Bob Chapman used to say about the Carlyle group. It's just a group of the elite. But he's warning of a repeat of the 90s emerging market crisis because of the stronger dollar. And he's estimating that there is $4.5 trillion in emerging market corporate debt that was dollar denominated. Mm-hmm. And if the dollar, which is already perched at a 14-year high versus the euro, continues to rise, that this would squeeze countries that have borrowed in dollars, forcing more bailouts. So, you know, we have gotten to a situation where that strong dollar certainly is, bringing about, close to a crisis. They cannot have a strong dollar, when you have the world's debt denominated in dollars.
It's not just to the extent that you have debt that's denominated in dollars. If the dollar is growing stronger, it's growing more valuable, and it means that you'll have to pay off the debt in more valuable dollars. We talk about it periodically on the program. Most people who've ever applied for a mortgage, they were encouraged to do so because you'd be able to pay off your debt in cheaper dollars because of inflation. When there's deflation, you pay off in more expensive dollars. That's terrible for debtors. Right, biggest debtor in the world. They're talking about all the emerging markets. No doubt it's a problem, but I don't think that's what really motivates these people. What motivates them is the government of the United States is the biggest debtor in the world. They can't deal with deflation for long. If they do, it'll put the government out of business.
You have $4.5 trillion in emerging markets. That might not be a lot to the $20 trillion the U.S. have, but you have these countries that can't deal with the $4.5 trillion. That is much of a threat to these countries to start the ball rolling. The U.S., they have back pockets. They can pull things out of their hat, and where a lot of these emerging markets can't. And so I think that's the threat when they talk about it. But yeah, absolutely, the U.S. is the biggest debtor ever, and certainly the stronger dollar does not benefit them. And we need a weaker dollar, which is all good for gold. And it's also a good time to introduce Mr. Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Good afternoon,
Greg.
Hey,
how you doing? I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Oh, Greg.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Just great.
Albert, Melody.
Just
and how's life in the fast lane?
Life in the fast lane, good. My life is good. I like this dollar thing because, I think Trump is going to be successful. Maybe not as fast as people think that he's going to be successful, but Bill Gross, to play off what Melody was saying, he was saying that past 2.6%. Watch that. That's what his line of demarcation is. And then I had Charles Denner on. He says, at what point do people start sell? I can't take any more pain. I'll get 80 cents on the dollar, or I'll get 90 cents, or I'll get 75 cents, and then that'll cascade into, it doesn't take that many people to start selling before things go haywire.
And you're talking about selling debt instruments, is that true?
Bonds, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
2.3% right now, roughly. On the 10-year treasury, and it bounces around, and that's come down some. But still, the problem is with Trump is that, and I like him. What's better than the alternative, which the alternative said Aaron limits on the First Amendment. Right? That was Hillary said that on Chris Wallace's show. The only really interview she ever did with anybody was with Chris Wallace, and I'm surprised he didn't jump all over that. As a journalist, you jump all over that. You don't care if somebody is a pro Ku Klux Klan or wants to say good things about the Black Panthers or whatever, as long as they're not overthrowing the country. As much as repugnant as any of that kind of speech is, I'm for people being allowed to say it. They took away the Redskins. I don't know if people realize this. They took away the Redskins, trademark for the Redskins because it offended some people, and I say that's a free speech issue. That's up to the government to decide what's offensive and what's not. So that's going to be a Supreme Court case coming up. If Trump loads the bases like I think he is with people who believe in the Constitution, that's going to get beat down. They're going to get their trademark back. But anyway, I digress. No, the dollar being high, expensive, to your point, Melody, they got to pay all these dollars back. Well, they can't print dollars. The Fed can, so we can have all this, debt. But the emerging markets, they have $4.5 trillion or whatever it is. That's still a lot. That's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
it's a lot of money. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, Paul Craig Roberts told me one time if there was just one country, say China or Japan or whatever, that liquidated $1 trillion in U.S. Treasury bonds, wow, the whole thing would implode. And according to John Williams, there's at least $16 trillion outside liquid dollar assets, bonds, outside the country. So, you know, who knows? I mean, we've never been here. You know, when you say, hey, the whole global economy can implode, yes, it could. That's the scary thing. Yes, it could. So,
what about the removal of cash? You know, we've seen that they're taking cash away in India. They're trying to get rid of cash and go all digital.
We've
seen reports in other places. Can they do it in the United States?
They can try, but there's a significant percentage of the U.S. that operates in the cash world, and they're legitimate businesses, incidentally, not drugs, which is what they want to say. They want to have cash so they can control you, but they're legitimate businesses, and legitimate people use cash. And I think it would hurt business tremendously if they did away with cash.
There's
a lot of business that's done in cash.
What about the people who are overseas who have, John Williams says there's $16 trillion in cash overseas. Somebody's got that sewed into their mattress. They've got it in the vault. They've got it some places. What happens to the cash overseas, and what impact does that have on the dollar standing as a world reserve currency if somebody says the $100 bills don't work anymore?
Well, they still, you're talking about bonds.
No, I'm talking about cash. I'm talking about people in Mexico and people in Greece that are storing their wealth in the form of $100 bills sewed into their mattress.
Yes, and I don't know what the answer is. I know, I don't know if it would be that way. There'd be some other equivalent thereof to turn in, I guess.
I don't know about that, because those $100 bills, what does the government of Greece or Spain or Italy care about $100 bills? They don't have to make good on them. My point is if we have people that are pushing, Larry Summers said we need to get rid of $100 bills, that's, you know, because we're going to protect us from drugs. What a cartoon that is. But what does that do to the standing of the dollar as a world reserve currency if all of a sudden trillions of dollars of $100 bills around the world suddenly become valueless? It can't
and
come
the
to the...
answer is, I don't know. I mean, that's a default.
No, I know,
basically.
But it's an interesting thought.
That's a default, basically. And the other thing is that the full faith and credit of the bond market is, if they start cashing in, will they print the money to continue the full faith and credit guarantee? Will they? And that's the reason why people, why would people park their money in treasury bonds? Because if you got $1 billion, you can't put it in a bank and get a $250,000 of insurance. You know, you have to have the full faith and credit. In other words, $1 billion worth of insurance for my $1 billion in bonds. But the problem is cashing them out, and the most liquid market in the world, which is supposedly the treasury market. And what happens to, what happens if too many people, not just to do something mean to the United States, as Catherine Austin Fitz said in an interview, hey, some of these guys might cash out because they need the money. And they're hitting their, what do you do when you get into a rough spot? You tap your savings. So that's their savings. And what happens if too many people tap their savings? Are they going to continue the full faith and credit? And the answer is, I don't know. Are they going to print the money to continue the guarantee, which would dilute the value of the dollars out there, which, it's a damned if you, damned if you don't. Would Trump come in and say, we're not going to cash all that. We're going to reorganize this debt. Oh, I don't know.
They can't reorganize the debt.
Well,
how do they reorganize the debt without canceling the value of the correlative debt instruments?
That's a nice word for default, reorganize. He had mentioned that early on in his campaign when he was with when he was in a field of other people, and everybody was mum on that, including him, and he hasn't brought that up again, Donald Trump. And I know he said something about it, because that to me is the question of, what are you going to do with all this debt if there's a stampede of people trying to get out of your bonds? Are you going to tell them no? Are you going to just go ahead and liquefy all the debt? Are you going to liquefy the bonds into dollars? I do not know.
We are caught between a situation where if they inflate, the dollar disappears. If they deflate, the government might disappear. The debtors might disappear. We are caught between the rock and the hard place here. And they can't pay the debt. They can't repudiate the debt. What are they going to do with the debt?
none of this is immediate. I mean, when they'll do it under stealth. They're not going to come out and announce everybody, yep, we're going to welch on all these 10-year Treasury bonds.
Oh, I agree.
So, and I don't know. I mean, what will they do? They'll probably say one thing while they're doing a completely different thing. I don't know. And that's the sad thing. That's why I think gold's copping a bid, because, you know, I just had Nomi Prinz on, who will be on tonight, and one of the things she said was, you know, they're not going to be able to let that go up. You know, the dollar, if it goes up, it makes all these other countries, all the debt they have to pay back to the United States much harder to pay. And if they let it go up, then the bonds go up, then the bonds become worthless. And but just because they don't want it to happen doesn't mean they can't get out of control. And so, yes, it can get out of control. And where do people run if they don't trust government debt, not even inflation? One of the things that Martin Armstrong brought up was the fact that people—it's not really an inflation hit; it's a hedge against—it's a hedge against of government, of mismanagement.
Yeah. You mean gold?
The gold, buying gold. You know, it's awful hard to beat that in hand, under your direct control. Prince had, because he had a pretty big portfolio. He had $6 million in cash. He had, like, I don't know, $700,000 in gold bars, $680,000, something like that. So he had that in gold bars, which is really not that big of his portfolio. He had three or four businesses. He had $6,000 in total cash. So, of course, it doesn't do you any good now. But anyway, so your questions are all valid, and the answers are, don't know exactly how this is going to work out, because you can't look back in history and go, oh yeah, this happened before.
We've been there before. Here's how they got out of it. No, they didn't get out of it.
Yeah, here this happened in the Great Depression. Here's that. Nope. No, and that's the scary thing about this. You can't look back any time in history and find any time since the flood, since Noah. You know, who knows what went on before the days of Noah, but you can't find any time in history where we were in this kind of precarious position with debt globally and fiat currency and no backing, and you just can't. I mean, when it goes bad, it's going to go bad very, very quickly.
It's going to go bad horribly. We could see circumstances comparable to the Civil War, not the Great Depression. When this happens, it might break down much like similar to the Civil War back in the 1800s.
Well, who's the bad guy? Who's the South and who's the North? I mean, that's
bad
the
guy is the one that instituted fiat currency.
Well,
that's where we're caught.
I think that a lot of people with brokerage accounts, and I hate to say this, and I don't want to sound, I don't want to sound like I'm Chicken Little, but you don't know what your brokerage has committed to and what they might hypothecate if they get into trouble, much like MF Global. And that was not a small, little, out-of-the-way brokerage. That was a primary dealer of treasuries, MF Global. So
we'll take up with
that.
We'll get back to MF. We're going to take a break for a couple of commercials. Here with our guest, Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom, and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csetalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, and our guest is Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. We're talking about the problems that the government's facing, the country's facing, our debt. You recently interviewed Bill Holter, and Bill said Trump is a smart guy, and he understands that really what he's going to be doing is presiding over a bankruptcy.
A reorganization.
That's what his main job is going to be, and that's reorganizing this country. Do you agree with that?
I do. It's much like the difference between Chapter 7, which is everything gets sold, everything, the land, the roofing, the buildings, the whatever else you have, whatever assets you have, that's a liquidation, Chapter 7. 11 is different. 11 is we're going to try to still stay in business, so we're going to cut all this debt. And I think that's what Donald Trump is going to be doing. I think he's going to have to do it. We're not going to be able to keep piling up this debt, because the whole world has to look at us and go, yes, we'll keep buying that. Oh, you're a great credit risk. So the whole world is going to have to keep doing that. And I just find it hard to believe the whole world is not going to keep doing that. That the whole world has to believe in our debt and believe that we can pay it off. And I say watch the 10-year treasury. You know, as things get shaky, it'll go up. As things get shaky, it'll go down, actually. They'll run into it for a while. And you could have some wild seesaws up and down in everything. Stocks, bonds, gold, silver, you name it. Things are going to go crazy. Ultimately, I think the long-term trend is for interest rates to go up. They kind of have to. If they don't go up, you're going to see what happens with gold and silver. And even if they do go up, there was a big piece. I can't remember who I had on, but they said that you know, in rising interest rate periods, don't think for sure that gold's going to go down in the biggest bull market in the modern era so far, in terms of percent increase, was in the 70s, and interest rates went up in the 70s. Now, there was a big takedown in the 70s where the price got cut in half, I think in 73, 74. Melody, you know more than I do about that. But ultimately, it peaked when interest rates were at 20-something percent at 850.
There were three major cycles of rate increases, and gold did extremely well during
because
those three major
curve.
Rate increases. Yeah.
They
so, yeah, gold
curve.
Does great.
And then when Paul Volcker came in, that was it. Game, set, match. That's when rates went way up because he thought, we're not going to have people invest in gold. We're going to raise rates to whenever I could crash the gold market and drive people into treasury bonds, which was the place to go into at the time. Treasury bonds. I mean, you could get a CD for 15% for 10 years, and they couldn't give them away because everybody thought the inflation would go hyper, and it didn't. But, now it's different. You think they can raise rates, too? I mean, you're talking about the difference. They're talking about Armageddon at 3% for the 10-year Treasury. That's what Bill Gross is saying after 2.6%. You're talking that, oh, my gosh, it could just completely fall out of bed. Other people say, when it hits 3%, it'll fall. 3% for 10-year money? That's going to cause your whole thing to fall out of bed? Well, that tells you that, if you can't do what Paul Volcker did. You can't raise rates to 20%, let alone 10% or 8%. You can't force them up by the Fed, fiat to force them up. I mean, the market may force them up as they did before they raised rates, but So that just shows you how weak it is. I mean, you think about it. If interest rates for housing went from, what is it now, around 4%, 4.1 for a 30-year loan, if it went to 6.5 or 7, which is a low rate, if you look past the last 50 years, last 60 years, 7% would be somewhere in the neighborhood of the middle, would be a mean average. And what happens if rates just went to 6%? Oh, my gosh, the housing market would implode.
Collapse, yep.
What happened if the 10-year treasury went to 3.5 or 4%? Oh, my gosh! I mean, that's how tenuous it is. That's how dangerous it is. And then we've produced all this debt at, they bought the 10-year treasury. How long has it been at 0%? How long has the 10-year treasury been around 2%, 2.5%, 1.5%? How long has it been in that range of 1.5% to 2.5%? I mean, 6, 7, 8 years? How has it been that way?
Safe haven.
Well, supposedly.
That's a presumption that it's a safe haven, and you wonder how people can maintain that, but it doesn't seem that safe to me. Let me ask you this. We had, in December 2015, the Fed raised the interest rate by 0.25%, and in 2016, starting in January, the price of gold increased ultimately by 21% the first 6 months of the year. And then this last December, 2016, they raised the interest rate again by 0.25%. And so far this year, gold is up about 6%. Are we looking at a parallel or just a coincidence?
I just want to bring this up really quick. I just pulled up the 10-year treasury. It's a CNBC thing. It's data.cnbc.com, and you have a chart going back 10 years. 5 years. I'm sorry. It only goes back 5 years. Well, 5 years, a little less than 5 years ago, say, I don't know, what would this be, February of 2012? I mean, the 10-year treasury was at 2.39. Today it's at 2.38, 5 years later. Do you know how much debt was sold in the last 5 years alone on the 10-year treasury? Do you know how much debt was sold? The debt's doubled, so what, $5 trillion? How much debt, of U.S. debt was sold, and the U.S. is leading the parade? I mean,
in how many years?
I mean, 5 years of somewhere
well,
in the neighborhood
that's
of 2.
Five out of Obama's
5,
8 years. He ran it up by $9 trillion, if I understand.
What happens if it goes to 3 or 4? What happens to that negative paying interest rate over in Europe with $13 trillion in negative bonds? How long do they hold? That's what Charles Nenner said. And here is where the rubber meets the road. And I just had him on, and he said, what could cause rates to go up? Things get out of control is people decide that they can't take any more losses, and they think they're going to lock in what losses they have, and they're not going to wait for even more losses. And what point is that? Is it 2.6, as Bill Gross says? That's what they're talking about—a massive sale, sell, sell, sell. And then is it 3.0? I mean, these are pretty low numbers, folks.
The point is when the public loses confidence in the probability that they'll ever get a repay on the debt.
Quote, asset. Remember I told you the assets, bond, debt is money and debt is an asset. Well, what happens if people go, this is a liability, I'm getting crushed. This is not an asset.
And it's not coming back.
And the bond market is orders of magnitude bigger. What, 2-3 times bigger than the stock market? I mean, the debt market, all of it. Fed, treasuries, boons, euro bonds, whatever's over, all over, municipal, state, all these bonds. All these bonds are all based off, the U.S. Treasury and interest rates and LIBOR and all. What happens if these bonds, this debt gets crushed and you don't have an asset and you have a liability and you're losing money in value and you'd like to spend your money because you couldn't put it anywhere else as a savings account? Well, remember, because full faith and credit or whatever, every country has this sovereign, credit, and you don't get back your money. At what point do they, everybody run for the damn doors? And that's the thing, and I don't see how you have a healthy stock market if the bond market is imploding. I just don't see how that happens. I had somebody ask me, do you think stocks will just keep going up? If the bond market, we've never had this before. Again, we've never had this before. We've never had this much debt. I mean, we're just in the last 5 years, I mean, I don't know what that number is, but I suspect it's in the trillions of dollars of debt sold between 2.5 and 1.5%. It's in the trillions of dollars. Yeah. And if it goes to 2.5 or 2.6 or 2.8 or 3, or when are people going to run for the door, sell?
And where will they run to? They're in bonds because they think bonds are safe to begin with. They're not likely to go into the risk of stocks. They are likely to look for another safe haven, and what's that likely to be?
I think it's going to be tangible assets. I think it's going to be...
So too. What else could it be?
You know, and I don't think it'll be housing. Housing's not the same. I mean, it's because it's based on, you know, what are the payments, man? As I've said before, the dumbest question you can ever ask, and yet it's the question that everybody asks, whether they're buying a house or a car, and that's what are the payments? And so... So that's the problem we face. The problem we face is that there's just so many things we've never seen before. So you don't know what zig is going to happen after you zag, or what zag happens after you zig, or what the equivalent, what the computers are going to do. What are the computers going to do? They're stupid. They're smart and they're stupid. And Jim Sinclair said, you know what happens? They all start parting the same way.
Algorithms are going to kill us before this is all over.
And what stops them?
Pardon me?
And what stops the algorithms? What stops them? Who? I mean, you know, as Jim Sinclair said, you know, you go down to the trading floor,
shut down
there.
The electric grid by accident. That's what'll stop the computers.
I don't know what'll stop them. I mean, that's, you know, the SEC allowing this to happen and front run trades and doing trades in nanoseconds and millions of trades in a second is stupid. It's not price discovery. It's ripping money out of the market. It's dangerous. Mm-hmm. And when it goes wrong, it's super dangerous, and it happens so fast. By the time you can get in front of it and stop it, or by the time you can pull the plug, well, a lot of damage has been done now, hasn't it?
Yeah, we could have a war and not even know it until it was all over. That's essentially, you know, metaphorically, that's what we're talking about. All of a sudden, you wake up and, my God, what happened? Everything was okay. Half hour ago, now it's all gone.
And I tend to agree with him, and I've been saying this too. But Holter thinks, and he's got a couple of decades of experience, you know, running brokerages and things like that. He's a financial writer now at JS Mindset. But he thinks it'll happen quickly. It'll happen over the weekend. I mean, you're going to go in on a Friday, and
over
on Monday, your whole world's going to be changed.
Over a weekend. You're not predicting this weekend. You're
no,
saying
a weekend. And everybody here, I had three people on, and these are the three people that got it right in 2016. I didn't think we'd have a crash in 15, but I thought we'd get one in 16. And other people thought we'd get one at the end of 16 as well. And we did get one with Trump, but they stopped it. I mean, you know, the artisans of money, I mean, limit down the night he was elected on the S&P futures. And, you know, that should have been an 800-point, you know, hammering, a drop. And then we had this Trump rally, that people are calling it. And I do think Trump is going to be successful. He's going to do some good and change some things. But I think he's also, with success, he'll get inflation. We'll get upward pressure on interest rates. We'll have to. And that's going to be a problem to work out. And that's why he will be reorganizing debt, because we ain't going to pay it all. We're not going to print all the money to pay it all. But, you know, Nomi Prinz, who's on tonight, said we wouldn't have a crash. Catherine Austin Fitz said we wouldn't have a crash. And Charles Ninner,
In 2016,
said we would not have a crash. There's a lot left, and they're going to keep this going. And they got the campaign.
They're going to keep it going for as long as they can.
But they're going to keep it going until
they have to
find a place to crash the plane, and not into a mountain. They're going to try to find a place to crash the plane at some point. When is that crash? When is it going to reach critical mass where they're going to say, okay, we're going to have to control the crash? And I think we're going to reach that. Right now, they've controlled the crash to not happen. But what happens if they know that the damn thing is going to happen, and then they're going to try to control it? And all three of these people, Nomi Prinz, Catherine Austin Fitz, and Charles Ninner, especially Ninner and Catherine Austin Fitz, say 2017 we're going to get hammered, and everybody is pointing towards the fall, including Nomi Prinz, and she says, I don't know if we'll get a total crash in the fall, but it'll be lower in the fall than it is right now. The markets, they'll be lower, but you know, things can get out of control. You know, that's the sad thing is that you have to include in your portfolio that things can get out of control, because they can. They certainly did in 08, and, you know, printing TARP and QE 1, 2, 3, twist and all that wasn't what they had in mind. They did not want to do that. They thought that they could get away with what they were doing, and we hit, and again, as Carl Denninger, who shut his site down and says, "I can't really do anything. I mean, I'm just going to live my life, and I'm done with this. I don't really need this." Carl Denninger, market-ticker.org. He may have started. He still has a site, but he doesn't really post that much. He says, "You know, we don't ever get to the wall." People are like, "Well, when do we hit the wall?" He says, "We don't ever get to the wall. We never get to the wall. Somebody always wakes up and goes, dang, I'm freaking out." You know, he says, we probably could have gone, we didn't have to have the crash in 08. We probably could have gone to all the way to 2010 before it actually hit the wall, but it never hits the wall. And so people think, well, you know, we have some time, but, well, it never hits the wall. There's always somebody that says, yeah, exit door's open. I'm going to run through it and take my money and run. I thought there'd be more people selling out of the market. And Michael Pinto thought this, too, before the end of the year. He says, could be in the first quarter. He says, but I think there'll be sellers in the first trying to get the, you know, the tax benefits of a lower tax rate for capital gains, and Trump's going to probably
Trump
get that through. And they're
going to
lock in their gains and whatever. Now, that doesn't happen so far. We've had all-time high after all-time high, but then, you know, it's kind of cracking up today. I don't know. I mean, it's the thing people should understand is that this is real. This is not something that might happen. This is not something that is some, lofty, a 1 in 1,000 chance of happening. I think it will crash. I think it'll have to crash. It's just a question of when.
Yeah.
And how does it look?
March,
what does the crash look like?
I think March is going to be a key month. I think you're going to start seeing a lot of end of February into March, the full month of March. I think that's where you're going to see some really big cracks come in.
I think.
And again,
is it
going to be the main one? Don't know. But I think that in March, I think is going to be a key month. That's
when
my,
would Trump
that's
like
my prediction.
When would Everybody's Trump like to see the crash if he's convinced there's going to be one?
Everybody's pointing towards the fall. Nenner does the whole cycle thing, and he thinks it's his fall. He says, and there'll be some big fits and starts. There'll be some big, takedowns before. I mean, if you look at 08, I mean, we had some big, big drops in the market, and you know, when it crashed, it was nowhere near where it started the year in 08. And so the idea that this can happen and will happen, even though it's been put off, and everybody's like, oh, well, they've been saying this for so long. Well, the math is awful. And now John McCain is putting out a $5 trillion, five-year, $5 trillion defense budget. I mean, you know, I don't know. When does the world say, enough. When do investors say, I can't take any more losses? And you know the people that bought, I mean, we have a whole bunch of people. Let's just go back to the 10-year treasury. And I just want to just go back there real quick. The 10-year treasury, and I'm looking at the 1-year chart of the 10-year treasury. 1 year today, 1 year. Okay. So
why don't we hold off on that? We're going to take a break right now, and we'll get back to the 10-year treasury as soon as we have a couple of commercials. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival with our guest, Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Please stay tuned.
Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival with our guest Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com. Some of the best videos, interviews that you can find on the internet. Again, Greg Hunter, USAWatchdog.com. We were talking about 10-year bonds, I believe, when we broke. Isn't that right, Greg? You had something you wanted to say about it?
Just this year, we've had up until November that we've had a sub, October, the end of October, beginning of November, we had a sub 2% interest rate all year long, just about. I mean, you know how much debt we sold at sub 2%, and now it's at 2.3%? I mean, can it go down? Can they force it down? Can they do, you know, artisans of money, as Nomi Prince says? Can they push it down? Yes. Do they have to do something to push it down? What are they going to be doing? What happens if other people decide to sell? I don't know. And the answer to all these questions is I don't know. I do know that at some point there's no way they can pay back all this money. We're not going to pay back. We have a $20 trillion deficit. There is no way on God's green earth we can pay that back. The cash out there in society right now, according to the Federal Reserve, is $1.4 trillion. Now, what's going to happen when everybody wants their cash in hand and don't want credit in a bond? And the answer is, that's the math. $20 trillion cash, a cash deficit, and we got $1.4 trillion in actual cash. That doesn't count counterfeiting and all the other stuff. But what happens that when people say, I want to sell my bond? And the answer is, wow, there's not enough cash to go around. What happens then? Do we just print the cash? Do we print the digits? What happens to the rest of the cash when you print that much many digits? It's not like we have a few hundred billion dollars we need to liquefy. You know, we have a lot. Are they going to do a carnival of liquefication and default? Isn't just printing money to pay stuff you're never going to be able to pay back? Isn't that and that's what a lot of people say. Peter Schiff says, you know, they're going to default or they're going to print money. And I said, you know, the politically expedient thing to do is going to be print money. There's your deal.
But that's a default.
Correct.
But that's a default because you inflate and you're paying off in cheaper dollars.
But the rest of the world and the big money players, who knows what's going to happen? And the idea is when it happens, when this mood changes, when the herd decides to shift. You know, if you're seeing a big flock of birds and the whole flock turns at the same time, how do they do that? I don't know, but I think that's what will happen with investors. The whole flock will turn at the same time, and there won't be any place for them to turn.
Let me ask you a question, Greg. China's already stating, making comments about their concerns with Trump, about trade, about South China Seas. Are they willing to begin dumping what they have and are dumping debt, or are they too much? Do they have too many of their own problems?
So, you know, that's kind of a thing. You know, both countries have a gun to each other's head. And, you know, once they pull the trigger, you know, the other country pulls the trigger, they cut their exports. You know, they still export a lot of stuff to the United States. Now, they also export a lot of stuff to Europe. But, listen, without the United States, you know, they would implode. Do they say, you know, we're going to flip the war card because we're going to stay in power, and we're going to make out like the evil United States is, well, the evil United States. But the scary thing about everything going on in the world today, we can't, you know, the United States is not going to get into a long, drawn-out war with China. They're not going to get into a, you know, multi-year World War II-type war with China. And we have war with a major superpower. That's going to go nuclear in a hurry. That's the scary thing about how screwed up the financial system is. Thank you, central banks, for, you know, not letting anybody take a loss and not letting anybody, you know, go under, not letting that, you know, Bank of America should have gone under, Merrill Lynch should have gone under, AIG should have gone under. Thank you, government and central banks. You know, Warren Buffett should have gone under. But no, no, we didn't do any of that. I was telling somebody this the other day. I don't know if I told you guys this. If I told you this, then I'm sorry to repeat the story. But it's like going to the doctor and the doctor saying, "Oh, Greg, man, I got some bad news for you. You got cancer. Oh, man, what should I do?" Well, there's two things we can do. Now, we can go cut that cancer out. And, oh, it's going to hurt. You're going to lose all your hair and chemo, radiation. You're going to limp. You know, but you're going to make it, but it's going to be rough. Or I can give you heroin or Dilaudid. What would you like? You know, we said back in 08, oh, give me the heroin. Dilaudid. Now, what happened to that cancer?
What still happened there to cancer? And growing.
You got it. We grew the global debt from, what, $170 trillion in debt to $230, $35 trillion. I mean, the numbers are so big, it's, you know, it's stupefying. And so we just grew in bonds. We grew that debt. That's not cash. That's the bonds. And as Hugo Salinas Price says, you know, all these bonds are like clouds over the hanging over everybody's head. And, you know, when they start liquefying that, it's going to rain money. It's going to rain yen and euro, and it's going to rain when everybody wants their money. Well, those bonds are going to crash to earth like they're made out of iron when they default on them. Or when people realize what they're getting paid in is a default. That it's, you know, you paid me in my dollars because, you know, if, let's take dollars, you know, a treasury bond is just a ball of dollars that pays an interest rate, and you hope to get more dollars back than what you put in based on the interest rate relative to inflation.
You hope the dollars are worth as much or more when you get
or
them
more,
back
you
as they were when you put them
as
in.
Much, you get enough back to make a profit, but they're not going to do that. I mean, again, $20 trillion just a cash deficit. Just look at the cash deficit, $20 trillion. And Congress, both sides of Congress, both houses of Congress, to be fair, are responsible for this. The Democrats and the Republicans, you know, are responsible for this. And the reason why they keep growing the debt is because when they stop it, the whole thing implodes. And but at some point, the whole thing's going to implode because people are going to want their money. They're going to need it. Are they going to want it? Are they going to do, like you said, what happens if China decides to sell? Well, what happens if China just needs the money? They're no longer the number one holder of treasury bonds. What happens if, you know, we decide that, you know, it's just better if we just start nuking people than to admit to everybody we're totally broke and we're defaulting on all this treasury debt? I don't know. But the idea here is that all that stuff can happen.
And what should a person do to protect themselves?
You just got to have you better own your car title. Some people should not buy, and I don't mean to make you mad, Melody, but some people should not buy gold and silver. They should go get their car title. They should go and get, you know, a new set of tires on their car and go buy food and water. For those people, that's what they ought to do. If you don't have a lot of money, you shouldn't be putting money in gold and silver. If you have any kind of portfolio, any kind of savings and stocks in your house and whatever, I think you ought to have your house title, but for anybody like that, you should have some. I mean, even Prince, who had and I go back to Prince, you know, he had, he's probably worth, I don't know, $300 million, but he had $800,000 in gold bars. He had 60 10-ounce gold bars or something like that. You know, he had a piece of his portfolio, a piece of his pie in some type of tangible asset under his direct control. So that's
well, the lesson here isn't the lesson get as far as you can from debt instruments, paper debt instruments? Are
well,
we looking
yes,
at any paper debt instruments that are likely, statistically likely, that they're going to be worth more several years from now than they are today? Or are they all, I mean, get away from paper, it looks like to me. Get away from paper. Put your wealth into something tangible.
I think it's going to be a carnival of default and inflation. I think we're going to have both. I think that's what we've had. And they've got powerful, and right now we do have powerful inflation and deflation forces. And if the real estate market falls out of bed, that's a powerful deflation force. But I think if you get cute and you go borrow lots of money and thinking, you know, it'll hyperinflate and you'll pay back the money with something equivalent to, you know, a few coins out of your pocket. I think what they're going to do is what Jim Sinclair, and I believe he's right about this, at some point they will revalue all that debt in something new and you'll pay the debt back in the new currency and it will be onerous. And so I wouldn't get cute with the debt. I would try to shy away from it. I would try to, you know, I wouldn't, if you're a long way from paying your house off, then I would concentrate on getting your assets and your car title under your control. I would make sure you don't have any other assets that you need to pay for. You know, because you don't know if you're, what's going to happen to your income stream. I feel sorry for people on Social Security and pensions because, you know, A, that could be totally disrupted. B, that could be totally hyperinflated. You know, what you're living on today, you know, I had a friend of mine tell me, he says, oh, hey, I'm getting my government pension. Oh, I'm going to be able to take a cruise in Alaska. And, you know, my wife's on a pension. And I said, that's great as long as that dollar value has buying power and the money they're paying you in has buying power. And as Mr. Magoo, you know, the maestro, Alan Greenspan, sat in front of Congress and said, well, we can guarantee the nominal value of the dollars. This is almost an exact quote. Well, we can't guarantee the buying power of the dollars. Now, this is Alan Greenspan, the guy they called Maestro. The real Maestro yep. was Volcker, who was, you know, raised interest rates to 20%, and people went out of business, and people took a hit. And, you know, assets were lost, and people had to file bankruptcy, but that was good for the system. Because of that, we got the 80s and the 90s, actually. And this long, you know, interest rate, this long bond sled ride that's been, hoo-hoo, bonds are an asset. Yeah, they are, as long as rates are going down. You'll see what kind of an asset they are when rates start going up. And they're going to try by hook or crook to keep these rates down because they don't want the dollar to go up. And they don't want interest rates to go up. And they don't want the bonds to become more worthless. And they don't want people to stampede out of the bonds. And, yeah, buy gold, buy silver, buy tangible assets.
We live in interesting times. Let's change the topic a little bit. Here's an article from the Washington Examiner, and the headline is Media Prepares for War with Trump. Members of the press are taking a strident tone against incoming Trump administration.
They're not the media.
And Jack Schaefer, press critic, Politico, he said, instead of relying exclusively on the traditional skills of political reporting, the carriers of press cards ought to start thinking of covering Trump's Washington like a war zone, where conflict follows conflict, where fog prevents collection of reliable information from the combatants, where the assignment is a matter of life and death. Is he talking about we need to lie, cheat, steal in order to somehow
exactly,
stop
that's what he's
Trump?
Doing. And you know, you hear the guy over at Politico. What's his name?
Jack Schaefer.
No. The other guy that
different
that,
one
called himself a hack. What's his name? Rush. Not Rush. What was his name? He was at Politico and was given information to and script approval and approval ahead of time, I believe, to John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and called himself a hack. Well, the New York Times hired him.
Okay. All right. But the mainstream media appears to be, or excuse me, the establishment appears to be using the mainstream media or trying to stop Trump.
That's propaganda. That's not the news. You have to be a fair arbiter of the truth. That is the classic definition of fake news because that is propaganda. To stop Trump is not your job. To report on Trump and be fair, a fair arbiter of the truth is what the media's job is. And by them saying this, what they're saying is that, well, you know, we're not really being the media, but we have to. It's Donald Trump. This is what they said in all these op-ed pieces leading up to Trump's, you know, during the campaign. That they said that they have to. It was the op-ed piece on New York Times saying that you know Donald Trump is stretching the limits of objectivity, right? That's what they actually. That's what their op-ed piece on the front page of the New York Times actually said that it was Donald Trump's fault. He was stretching the limits of objectivity. No, he wasn't stretching the limits of objectivity. They were signaling to everybody, and they were telling people to stop Trump. They're reporters to stop Trump, to stop him.
Which means they can't possibly be objective if they use this war metaphor. They're saying we are coming at him as an enemy, not as an objective reporter. We're coming. This is a war. Bias, prejudice. We're against it, no matter what he does.
This is just Jim Ruttenberg, who comes out, and they prove this on the front page of U.S. On the New York Times, that Trump is testing the norms of objectivity in journalism. And then he went on to say that journalists should stop Donald Trump. Then you had Michael Wolff at USA Today saying that reporters are trying to do this of their own volition. Oh, right, yeah, there's no bosses over there. Yeah, that's right. There's the inmates are running the asylum. The reporters can do whatever they want. That's a lie. I was a reporter at the network level for 9 years. That's a lie. And so what he's talking about is more of the same. You know, the testing the objectivity. We have to go to war. Then your propaganda. Let me read you what propaganda means. This is from the Oxford Dictionaries. Information, especially of a biased or misleading nature, used to promote or publicize a particular political cause or point of view. That's propaganda. So they are resorting to propaganda. That's what they are. They're fake news. They are defining that they are fake news, and they are writing a justification for it. Meanwhile, calling anybody who takes the other side of the opinion or anybody that doesn't agree with the legacy media, the old-timey media, as I call it, that they're fake news and they're real news, even though what they really are is real propaganda. And they're real biased.
We've got about 40 seconds left, Greg. Who wins? Can the mainstream media put Trump down, or is Trump big enough where he can put them down?
They have already put themselves down. What the New York Times, let's look at today's, the New York Times is laying off people. The New York Times is laying off people. What did I predict? I predicted the layoffs after the first of the year are going to be stunning. And that's exactly what's going on. I had one woman write me from Arkansas saying, hey, my little paper is announcing, you know, they're laying off 10 people at the newspaper. And what I'm telling you is that they are going to kill themselves because they cannot call themselves the news if they're going to war and they're unobjective and they're not fair arbiters of the truth. So they will kill themselves, and Trump, yes, will win. Now, that said, Trump's got a lot of
We're going to have to let it go at that, Greg. We're out of time. I want to thank you for being on the program. That's Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com.
Thank you.
I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Greg Hunter, and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.